This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch the show on Free Speech TV nationwide and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates. Many Americans are looking for pathways out of the dangerous political moment we find ourselves in as Donald Trump and his party ram their way over the Constitution, and Democrats too often back off from the fight for progressive values. But a new front in the battle for social, environmental, and economic justice is emerging: cities. Around the world, cities are filling the vacuum of state-level leadership on issues of great importance. Chronicling this powerful movement is my guest, Jimmy Tobias, a contributor to The Nation magazine, where he writes regularly for Cities Rising, the magazine's ongoing series on progressive pockets of resistance nationwide. He joins me now. Welcome to the program, Jimmy.
Thank you for having me.
So the article that you wrote for The Nation about this starts off talking about a recent conference that took place in Barcelona called Fearless Cities. This is not just a U.S. movement. It appears to be a global way out of the kind of right-wing assault we see ourselves in. Tell us about Fearless Cities, and it took place in Barcelona.
That's right. It was put on by Barcelona En Comú, which is the governing coalition that runs the city, and it's a leftist coalition of various parties and entities in the region and in the city. And basically, the conference brought elected officials from all over the world, from Brazil, from the United States, from Canada, from Hong Kong, from South Africa, and elsewhere, to discuss the role that municipalism can play in pushing back against sort of the rise of right-wing authoritarians across the globe. Yeah, so the conference was basically just sort of a meeting of the minds of city council people and mayors to discuss how basically cities can push back against austerity and sort of the xenophobia and fear-based politics that are sort of on the rise.
So how well represented was the United States, and did a lot of the conversations focus on the emergence of Donald Trump?
The United States was well represented. There were council people from Philadelphia, from New York. There were people from Berkeley, California, from Portland, and elsewhere. And yes, I think a lot of the conversation was about Trump, the rise of Trumpism, and how cities can sort of build these sort of grassroots movements that can support elected officials, that can change the electoral field. And I think one of the major takeaways for a lot of people who attended the conference was that Barcelona En Comú, the political coalition that rules in Barcelona, they are very deeply rooted in grassroots organizations, in grassroots movements in Barcelona. And so they're accountable to them. Their leaders rise out of those movements. And I think a lot of city council people in the United States would like to see something similar here, where professional politicians don't just try to co-opt movements that already exist, but actually the politicians themselves grow out from the movement, where they're trained in leadership skills and accountability to the community.
Right. So the politicians follow the movements rather than movements following politicians. That sort of flipping of the dynamic is absolutely crucial to pushing from the grassroots up, right?
Exactly. I think that was the major theme.
Now, the U.S. Conference of Mayors also became a space for cities organizing here in the United States, particularly on the issues of climate change when Donald Trump pulled out of the Paris Accord. How strong is the movement of cities taking leadership here in the United States, and what did we see at this year's U.S. Conference of Mayors?
I mean, the movement in cities around climate change is pretty incredible, and it is happening at a number of different levels. I mean, you're seeing a lot of cities divest from banks and other entities that, you know, are investing in pipelines or financing pipelines and other fossil fuel infrastructure projects. So that's one side of it. You have a lot of cities, even small cities in the South that are Republican controlled, that are developing their own renewable energy sources and turning to their own and basically trying to move away from fossil fuel electricity production. Then you have the U.S. Conference of Mayors, which is a bipartisan body, usually pretty sort of staid and centrist And at their conference this year in Miami Beach, they adopted a resolution that basically encourages and calls on every city across the country to adopt clean and renewable energy by 2035, 100% clean and renewable energy. So that is a pretty huge step forward, especially in light of the federal government's sort of abdication of its responsibilities in terms of climate change.
In your article, you discuss a number of specific instances where cities have really done some interesting work and taken leadership in the United States. Let's go through some of these, because I think when we talk about specifics, it's very, very powerful. One of them is the issue of how cities use their power to divest pension funds. Tell us about how New York City has divested its pension funds from the prison system. How did that movement begin? Who has led it? And, you know, can it serve as a model for other cities who just don't feel that our incarceration system is something worth investing in?
Yeah, I mean, the divestment movement across the country has been incredible on a number of different fronts. And New York just announced that they will be they'll be the first city in the country to fully divest their public pension fund from three different private prison companies: GE4S, the GEO Group, and CoreCivic. And these companies have taken a beating in the press. They've been investigated for human rights abuses and ineptitude. And so, you know, I think the movement against these companies is coming from many different angles, from the Black Lives Matter movement to investigative journalists, including The Nation and Mother Jones, who have done a series of investigations into these companies. And finally, elected leaders are kind of hearing, are listening to these calls to pull out of these basically corrupt and inhumane entities. And so New York has taken this enormous step. But you know, it's not just private prisons either. The Seattle, San Francisco, Santa Fe, Missoula, Montana, where I am right now, these cities have also announced their intentions to divest from Wells Fargo and other banks that are financing the Dakota Access Pipeline and other fossil fuel infrastructure projects. Basically, people are realizing—
And here in Los Angeles, where our program is based, the city is also considering that, yeah.
That's right. Right. The city council just voted, in fact, to begin taking steps toward divesting about $40 million from his holdings in Wells Fargo. And people are realizing the financial power of cities to change policy, even when the federal government won't listen.
What about the control of the commons? Let's talk about how there's also a fight going over the issue of water and who controls access to water. You cite Philadelphia's fight over water, and water infrastructure in this country is in shambles. You know, the most high-profile case being that of Flint, Michigan. What are cities doing to take back control from forces of privatization that often get backing from Washington?
Yeah, that's right. The water system in this country is definitely facing a crisis. The EPA estimates that public water systems need about $400 billion in repair over the next couple decades. And meanwhile, federal spending on these systems has plummeted since the 1980s. So there's a real need for robust public funding for water infrastructure. And the problem is, when these cities don't get the repairs they need, it opens them up to privatization. Private companies see opportunities to invest funds into once public entities and turn them into their own sort of profit centers. And so that's a big danger, especially now with Trump in office and his sort of infrastructure plan that seems to be heading towards privatization of everything. Water cities and counties and other local governments can take back water systems if they're lost to privatization. And that's actually a pretty robust movement. It's called municipalization, which is sort of another word for socialization, where a city uses eminent domain or maybe makes a purchasing deal with a private entity to take back their infrastructure, and so that's been happening all over the country for decades, and it's actually a pretty robust movement. And I think it's very important to keep that in mind now as Trump may attempt to privatize roads and bridges and other important commons, as you said.
And it's not just Philadelphia. Atlantic City also has this fight going on, where New Jersey Governor Chris Christie has, of course, come down on the side of the privatizers. Chris Christie being in the news quite recently over a state level government shutdown where he was basically caught enjoying a private beach meant for governors, while others in the state had to contend with crowded other beaches because the one he was on was shut to the public.
Right. And in Atlantic City, the city's financially struggling. And so the state basically has one of these emergency manager laws, and they've taken control of Atlantic City.
Just like Flint, right?
Exactly. Just like Flint. And they may attempt to privatize the city's water system. And so there's sort of a citizens movement afoot to prevent that. But that's just one example of what's happening in terms of privatization. But even if if somehow that water system is privatized, it can be, there are avenues for cities to take back what once was theirs when privatizers do get their way.
So one of the issues that jumps out at me when I look at these various movements is they seem patchwork and isolated. There's different cities involved in different ways on many different issues, using different strategies to get there. Aside from global conferences like Fearless Cities or the U.S. Conference of Mayors, which you said is usually sort of a centrist organization, is there any sort of way in which cities here in the U.S. are getting organized and kind of affirming progressive values? Is there greater coordination happening, not necessarily at the city government level, but even among grassroots groups working in different cities to push their officials in the same direction?
Well, there certainly there is a group of elected officials called Local Progress, which is a network of progressive city council people and mayors. And they do a lot of excellent work, and they actually work with us on our monthly review of these issues. And they're excellent. And, there are lots of issues-based collaboration. Out west, for instance, there's sort of a rising tenants' rights movement in California, in Seattle. And I believe there's going to be a conference. I believe it's going to be in Los Angeles, but there's going to be a conference this fall that people are coming together to kind of learn about best practices for tenants' rights organizing and this burgeoning movement that's sort of re-emerging after years of dormancy.
In states like California, the housing crisis is absolutely intense, and a lot of people, not just low-income, but even middle-income people are being pushed out of cities.
Right. And so there's this tenants' rights movement on the rise, which, kind of harkens back to the 70s, the 60s and 70s, but it's back and it's doing really incredible things, and especially around the West Coast. And then there's the divestment movements. I don't know if there's one single entity or organization where everyone's coming together, but there's certainly a lot of collaboration on various issues across the country, whether it's climate change, divestment, tenants' rights, sanctuary cities efforts, and things along those lines.
Jimmy, why do you think cities are such great locations for this kind of organizing? I know that sounds like an obvious question, but when I think of cities, I think of places that are generally much more racially diverse than rural America, where people from very different socioeconomic, racial, ethnic, national backgrounds are kind of forced to live together and seem to tend progressive. We see voting trends in cities tending much more progressive, even when those cities are within much more conservative states. Is that one reason that you see this movement for social justice, for progressive values, really emerging at the city level?
I think that's certainly an incredibly important aspect of it. I think also cities are places where the young gather, and the young tend to be restless.
Universities,
the young, especially in our era, the young definitely trend to the left and are angry about what they're seeing, from their government, about what they're seeing from the major institutions of authority in this country. I also think cities provide spaces, public spaces, where people can be together and cross paths and get in the streets. And I think that's incredibly important. You know, it's easier to prevent isolation in some ways in cities. And I think all of those factors are incredibly important. So I think I would say those, at least those three.
And so finally, then your articles, your series of articles seem to suggest that getting involved at the local level can be extremely powerful. Many people are feeling very disenfranchised. They're feeling very helpless about what's happening in Washington, D.C., especially those who live quite far away from Washington, D.C. So do you feel that getting plugged into local movements to push for change at the local level is imperative, but also that people should really start considering running for their city councils when there are vacancies, you know, running to be a member of your own city council?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, I think what we're trying to do with this series is really highlight incredible, inspiring progressive activism that's making a difference, that's working, especially at the local level. And so, for instance, one of the groups the series profiled was a group out of Lancaster, Pennsylvania, which is a relatively small city in central Pennsylvania, where a group of multiracial young people have come together, and they're working both in the city and in the rural community to basically break the stranglehold of both the Republican and the Democratic establishments, because they want to see a multiracial, progressive political force that can chart the course for their community. And so that's what they're trying to build. And they're thinking about running people for office. They're challenging their congressmen. They're holding rallies. And the kind of work that they're doing is incredible. And they're called Lancaster Stands Up. And that's the kind of thing that I really think will make a difference in this country. You know, local, grassroots, multiracial, progressive organizing that can speak to everyone about the issues that are most important to them, whether it's healthcare, the environment, things along those lines.
And yeah, there are so many sort of emerging progressive leaders of color in particular who are pointing the way. Chokwe Antar-Lumumba, the new mayor of Jackson, Mississippi. You point out Philadelphia Councilwoman Maria Quiñones-Sanchez. We have the Seattle City Councilwoman Kshama Sawant. And so certainly there is this kind of emerging group of leaders at the city council level and the mayoral level as well that are more diverse than we've seen before and who tend to be progressive. Well, we'll post a link, Jimmy, to your article from our website later today. Good luck to you, and thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
My guest is Jimmy Tobias. He's a contributor to The Nation, where he writes regularly for Cities Rising, which is the magazine's ongoing series on progressive pockets of resistance nationwide. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also find us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and Vimeo.